at the casinos where we were standing, and I could see the casinos, and man, they were beautiful. I mean, and one of them was open, one of them was not, but you could tell they are just unbelievable. They're better than they were before the storm, and I've been down there, so I know what I'm talking about there, and they have rebuilt these things. They're up, and they're nice. They're getting up more and more up every day, and then while you're standing there looking at that beautiful casino, I forget the name of it, I'm sure Ray can remember, but when you're looking at it and you see the flashing, beautiful flashing sign and the exquisite decor and the beauty of the structure, and you turn around and look in the housing area right across the street, and every one of those houses is, it just, in shambles. It is, look.
Well, no. I mean, no. That's all we really need to know about the priorities of the Bush administration. Get the gambling hells open. And, you know, look, I'm not going to sit here and be Mr. Moral and say, you know, you shouldn't gamble. You know, you want to gamble, gamble. But you know what? There's more at stake than that.
Well, now, I'm going to tell you, I talked to a Department of Homeland Security agent yesterday. And he was a real... I can't use the word on air, but you can figure it out.
Horse his ass?
He was worse. You know, I mean, he would have been insulting to a horse's ass, okay?
Okay.
And he was really, I asked him one question, and he went off on me and started trying to quiz me to make me tell him my sources. And I said, no.
Naughty.
I'll just write down in my column that you refuse to speak to me without knowing my sources, and I'm not telling you that. So I will just mention what a fine fellow you are and being so cooperative in answering the question.
Yeah.
And,
well, I mean, that's a legitimate journalistic tool. You know, so-and-so was asked for comment and refused to do so.
Well, see, Ray and I both have journalistic experience. I worked for a newspaper for 8 years, and I did investigative reporting for them, and Ray has done investigative reporting, too, so he's not exactly talking to someone that hadn't been there before. I never covered anything of this nature or magnitude, but this guy's name surfaced in the discussion today, and it really gets interesting here, Bob, because, see, in this little chain of command of where the goods flow down through, one person's name popped up, and it happened to be the person that came around and stopped the interview today.
Yeah, I think you've got some long, hard nights in front of the keyboard, Sarge. People deserve to know this kind of stuff.
And I'm going to break it. And the Department of Homeland Security guy's name was in the middle of it. The person that came in and threatened to call the cops and was confrontational with us. She was in on it. She took a bribe from what I heard her daughter say. And if we can get that recording, we can prove it. But this is the sort of thing that's going on down there. The people are depressed. Man, you can look in their faces. You can stop in a store and go to buy a Coca-Cola, and you can just see the fear and the depression in their faces, and it looks like they're just going to break down and cry at any second. That's how bad it is. The people are sick. I found out there's more diseases down there that are not being reported. The hospitals are indeed overflowing with Katrina-related illnesses.
Sure.
And this is being covered up.
Well,
yes.
You know, and some of this I don't even think it has to be actively covered up. It just has to be ignored like they continue to do.
Right. I mean, all of this is coming out, and the Department of Homeland Security guy that I talked to, he would not answer a question unless I emailed them to him. So I sent him.
They've got their marching orders. They won't answer any questions. No. And working on the fly is poison to them. It's really, really bad for job security.
Well, I sent him 9 really hardcore questions that's really going to keep him busy for a few days.
Well, if he chooses to answer.
So, I mean, look, I'm going to tell you.
I mean, I'm not downplaying what you're doing. You understand, Sarge?
Sure.
You're dealing with bureaucrats, okay? And you're dealing with Bush bureaucrats. So, but, you know, by definition, you are dealing with people who are scared to death for their jobs. And since they're Department of Homeland Security, they might not be the most above board people in the world to begin with. After all, they tried to terrify America with a phony, dummied up, ginned up, faked up, the stadium plot last weekend. Did you happen to notice when Homeland Security was telling us the stadiums were going to get bombed that the kid had put a stadium in New York City when there ain't one?
I didn't know that.
The Giants and the Jets both play in New Jersey.
Right, in the Meadowlands.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, so, now, Bob Buston, I want to tell you this. As soon as I can get it up, there is a agency that people can go to, and I'm going to get it up on unreportednews.net, and we're going to set it up, and it is going to be a way to help these people down there because, folks, the only hope these people have is us. They are not getting anything. So I'm going to get it up as soon as I possibly can, and I hope everybody, if they've got $1, $5, I don't care what it is, if they've got it and they can donate it, I'm going to have this up, and I can guarantee you it will be going to someone who will indeed use it properly.
Well, good, Sarge. That's the ultimate goal of all this, isn't it?
That's right. It's like I told Ray, our main goal, if we uncover something, great. But our main goal is we want to find out what's going on with the people and get them some help.
Get them
this
help.
Is not right, man. I have seen situations that should have been far worse, that this may look really nice. And that's just pathetic.
That is.
Bob, I'm going to let you go, and Ray may call you in later, or he should be getting home shortly, but I wanted to get you started on it. Maybe Ray can remember some things I didn't.
Okay, thanks so much, Sarge. Take care.
Thank you, and happy anniversary again.
Hey, thanks again. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Our good friend Sarge in southern Mississippi. If you want to backtrack, our conversation with Gara from the chat room was last night. You can hear the truth of what is going on the Mississippi Gulf Coast, and it is, in fact, horrifying. We've got a couple of minutes before we go to the top of the hour. Let's get another phone call started. David is calling in from Middle Tennessee. David, welcome to the program.
Well, happy horny birthday.
I knew somebody'd do that sooner or later.
Wait a second. Did I say that right?
I think you did.
So close enough. What Sarge has yet again proven has happened even before Katrina. You know, there were hurricanes that missed Miami-Dade County in 2004. And the next thing you knew, there were literally $22 million worth of unjustifiable claims paid out into that area where people would just write up something. You know, whether it was a millionaire that wanted to bury a relative that had nothing to do with the hurricane, and $22 million worth of unsubstantiated claims flowed through FEMA, I'm sure with a little cream off the top for this guy and for that guy and the other guy. And this happened in 2004. And, of course, you know, some small newspapers tried to investigate it. They finally got Brownie to come down there, and he never answered a question. You know, a long convoy of black blinking navigators showed up. They all pile out of the automobile and then just don't talk about anything that matters. That's their way.
It's political patronage of the sleaziest sort, David. I understand political patronage. I understand there's always going to be a certain amount of it. However, to do that with people's lives in these fragile situations, to me it's a capital offense.
Well, it's also just an indirect racial slur. You know, if you've got donated goods, services, and money headed toward the victims of Katrina, there's going to be a significant number of that Republican hierarchy say, you know, wouldn't this be better at my house? I don't want to see this nice stuff go to those people that wouldn't flush the toilet at the Superdome. It'll be better off with me. They're used to living that way.
Lord. David, I need you to, could you stand by for a few minutes while we go into the news?
actually, Bob, I'm going to leave it open to the other callers. Just, you know, have a great birthday party. I'm working on some stuff here, but I just wanted to get in and, you know, yak for just a second. So
okay, well, I appreciate it.
I'll check in later once I get some computer stuff out of the way.
All right, thanks.
Talk to you later.
Take care. Well, we do have to we do have to take a bit of a break, and we've got the news coming up. When we come back, your call. We've got a couple of lines open, 877-443-2366, 877-4, head on. Email comes in to bob@headonradio.com, and I wanted to tell you about a little something new at the headonradionetwork.com website. Something we put up just, you know, not necessarily topical stuff, but a thing where you can go and post your thoughts about the horn itself. Your thoughts about the horn. It's in the left-hand column of the website, headonradionetwork.com. Just an opportunity, you know, I was thinking about it, you know, because it's our birthday. So it's there for you, your thoughts about the horn. We'll be back after the news. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. U.S. General George Casey said he may send in more troops to Baghdad to help stop the bloodshed. The Associated Press reports that four more U.S. troops have been killed, raising the death toll so far this month to 91. Casey also said today that Iraqi security forces should be able to take over security in 12 to 18 months. He also accused Iran and Syria of providing support to insurgents in Iraq. In Baghdad, the U.S. military continues searching for a U.S. soldier of Iraqi descent who works as a translator. Gunmen kidnapped him yesterday while he was visiting relatives, then forced him into a car. In Gaza today, a Spanish photographer was released unharmed after one day in captivity. It's not yet clear who kidnapped him. In China, the foreign ministry says North Korea is not planning another nuclear test and under certain conditions is willing to return to six-party talks. Also, a spokesman said the Norse leader, Kim Jong-il, did not apologize for the first nuclear test, as reported earlier. On Capitol Hill today, House Speaker Dennis Hastert testified before the House Ethics Committee that's investigating the Page scandal. His appearance followed House Republican campaign chairman Tom Reynolds, who says he told Hastert last spring about former Representative Mark Foley's inappropriate emails. Afterward, Hastert said he told the committee that, quote, they needed to move quickly to get to the bottom of this issue, including who knew about the sexually explicit messages and when they knew about it. Off the Louisiana coast, a plan to lease nearly 400 oil and natural gas sites has been put on hold pending the results of environmental impact studies. Those studies will determine what effect drilling would have on the coastline. U.S. researchers say flu shots are safe for children and involve only minimal side effects. They found that only 13 of the 45,000 children who were studied for 6 weeks after their vaccinations reported mild effects such as nausea. Hurricane Paul has been downgraded to a tropical storm. Paul is expected to reach the Baja Peninsula early tomorrow. Meanwhile, an analysis by the Associated Press finds that after Hurricane Katrina, residents in white neighborhoods were three times as likely as black homeowners to appeal insurance disputes. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news are next. It's 2.5 minutes past the hour.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Animal compassionate meat labels will soon be showing up at Whole Foods Market coolers. The New York Times says a new label shows a growing concern about the humane treatment of animals before slaughter. Federal Reserve policymakers began their two-day meeting today. Tomorrow they'll announce whether interest rates will go up from the current rate of 5.25%. The Associated Press reports that many U.S. troops are so deeply in debt that they're not being sent overseas. Last year, more than 2,600 troops had their overseas clearances revoked. The Pentagon says that financial problems make troops more susceptible to bribery and treason. $17 million of a $3.5 billion loan from Japan to Iraq will be used to upgrade a refinery in Basra. More than $153 million of it will go toward upgrading a fertilizer plant. Lockheed Martin has posted a third-quarter profit of $629 million, up 47%. This defense contractor credits higher sales of its electronic systems. And BP reports its third-quarter profit fell 3.6%. The company cites production losses in Alaska, along with higher British taxes. Light sweet crude settled at $58.81 today. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow set a new record close of 12,117. The Dow was up 115 points, NASDAQ up 13, S&P 500 up 8. You can hear more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
5.5 minutes after the hour, I'm Bob. And, pardon us if we... I can let one of the... I'm back where I'm supposed to be now. Agnes is back behind the board. The kids are home from the Halloween party. All is right with the universe. And I don't know, maybe she wants to sing happy birthday. I won't do that to you. I don't want to get sued, and I don't want to inflict that on our listeners. Because, you know, you deserve so much just for sharing your time with us. You don't need to be tormented by my dulcet tones. Let's go to Susan in Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Happy birthday.
Well, thank you.
I will be nice and not send you either.
I have a feeling you would be far better off doing so than me.
Well, I'll be really nice and not have my sister sing to you. That's what she does to me on my birthday.
I mean, I start singing Susan and cats commit suicide. I mean, it's
yeah,
bad.
Yeah, voice that can curdle milk at 100 yards. You know, it's just one of those. Anyway, couple reasons to call. First of all, your guest.
Yes.
And you were asking, you know, what was the whole point behind all of it? You ever heard of a guy named Papa Doc Duvalier?
I remember Papa Doc and Baby Doc.
Yeah. Well, let me get out my tinfoil hat here, but all of
don't put it on too tight.
I have been thinking that George Bush had absolutely no intention of leaving 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
You are not the first one who has said that. I mean, so, you know, let the tinfoil ride lightly.
Yes, and, you know, it's this is just something that would, you know, dovetail into that just really well. You know, it just, that's all I need, you know, it's just this icky thing.
Yes.
In which case, here's something for the sampling people. George, sit on it. Pardon me. The other thing I wanted to mention is my husband and I voted today.
Really?
Yeah.
And
our ballots in the mail.
Yeah, you're an Oregonian, so you can do it by mail, and you've got fairly clean elections to boot, do you not?
Yeah. And but the nice thing is, first of all, you have to be, you know, get up the gumption to actually fill out the ballot and either stick it in the mailbox or take it down to the county office.
And I'll bet that, I'll still bet that there are even people who don't have that kind of gumption.
Oh, tell me about it. There's one person in particular in my little town. She and I have words every time we run into each other because the first thing out of my mouth is, have you voted yet? Oh, I don't vote. Why not? Then she gets Susan's Civic Lesson 101. She doesn't like. She tries to avoid me whenever possible.
No, it's that voting lady.
Yeah, it's the lady with the mouth. You know, she just,
Oh, I don't understand people who won't vote, Susan. Honest to God, I get such a charge out of it.
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, people who refuse to vote, they ought to take them out to some country that is the worst dictatorship imaginable and dump them down in there and say, okay, now you don't have to vote.
Well, but then they'd want to. The thing with, you know, what do you want to bet? What do you want to bet your non-voting neighbor will gladly vote on American Idol or something equally inane?
Oh, of course, always.
But you know, God forbid I should say this, but you know, we played last night that stupid little piece of blather from Sean, you know, life support for a hairdo Hannity. And you know, he said, you know, I want some of you people to stay home.
There are people who will believe me.
Yeah, well, there are people who will vote who, if you got right down to it, probably had no business doing so. I mean, if you're willing to go to the polls because you're afraid the queers are going to get married, you should stay home.
Yes, stay home.
Because you're too ignorant to exercise the franchise.
Yes.
But the fact of the matter is, unlike Hannity, I don't want that person to stay home. They probably should, but they should. I don't want them to. I want full participation in the franchise, because somewhere along the way, a miracle might happen, and that person might actually try to enlighten him or herself.
Yeah, he might actually wake up and find out, ooh, you mean that's what it's all about?
Yeah, it's not about big rocks in schools and picking out China patterns. It's about whether or not there's going to be a United States of America here in 50 years.
Right. Or even 10. I'm not... If this election gets stolen, I have very, very little hope for this country unless, you know... Well, we can't advocate violent overthrow of the government. That's against the law.
No, we don't have that kind of freedom of speech.
No, but barring something drastic happen, if they steal this election, that's what it would take. Speaking historically.
Yeah.
From my history.
Well, you know, I don't know if you saw it, but I stayed up late to do it. I should go to bed once in a while. But I stayed up late to see Keith Olbermann's comment, you know, with regard to the stupid "these are the stakes" ad that the RNC's got running, and it just—I've seen it several times, and he put everything in perspective so nicely, and you know, he does it with real fire and vim and vigor, but he does it civilly as well.
Yeah.
You know, God knows the dressing downs that he delivers to George Bush are dressings down that George Bush started needing probably when he was about 3.
And never got.
Yeah.
Because his parents couldn't be bothered to care.
Well, right.
But he's the one, Olbermann has the wonderful ability of calling somebody an SLB without actually using the words.
Right. You know, living proof of the fact that you can operate within the purview of the so-called 7 dirty words and still be pretty doggone forceful.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But, I want these people called to account. I share your concern. I can imagine, I won't give odds on it, but I can imagine a scenario in which George Bush would refuse to leave the White House in January 2009. I can imagine a couple of them. Because I don't have to imagine them very much, Susan. Before the 2004 election, the Republicans floated a trial balloon where they said, well, if we got attacked again, we might not be able to hold the election.
Right. I had a nice conversation with my representative in the House today with his office.
Congressman Wu?
Yes. And the subject was impeachment. I wanted to find out, first of all, please tell me you're not one of those DLC creeps. And secondly, are you going to support it? He's co-sponsoring it.
Hot dog. Hot dog. You know, there are people out there who understand, you know, again, we come back to that stupid phrase. These are the stakes. You know, you want to know why we're still talking about the man in the cave with the dialysis machine in Pakistan where they just surrendered? Ask the guy in that 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Maybe he can tell us. Really. There's interesting data out there. 51% of Americans who disagree with George Bush also want to see him impeached now.
Yeah.
We've crossed a very important threshold, and Susan, it's not there to be seen on MSNBC. It's not there to be seen on CBS, NBC, ABC, Fox, CNN, headline news. They, you know, Nancy Grace, Glenn Beck. No, it's not there.
It's not up there. The statement Congressman Wu put out up on his House website when they passed the torture bill, it was something that I felt was, he was one of the few people in Congress that seemed to have actually gotten the point. So it's up on the blog if anybody wants to read it, because he comes right out and says, hey, these people can now pick up my wife.
Exactly.
And make her disappear.
Exactly.
So, we aren't as alone as we thought.
No, I don't think we are. What we've got to do is get behind people like John Conyers, David Wu, and give them all the support that we can. And at the same time, get hold of our sort of weak-kneed, sort of no stomach for the fight, Congressman, and let them know we've got their backs, too. Because, you know, I know what the arguments are going to be, Susan. It's going to be, elections are just around the corner. The elections are always around the corner.
Yeah, and the elections have a tendency to get stolen. An impeachment, especially one that we can actually uphold into the Senate and convict, will toss the creep right out on his tush.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Oh, that warms the cockles of my heart.
I know.
I'm going to let you go on to other callers.
All right, Susan, thank you so much, and have a wonderful evening.
You too, and have a nice birthday cake.
Gonna try to. Might even be a birthday cocktail at the end of the show. Take care.
Bye-bye.
I don't know. There's one of those frou-frou drinks out there that's named a birthday cake or something, isn't there? And I don't know. Let's go on to our good friend David calling from Massachusetts. David, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
It's always good to call you in. I just want to give you an update. First, a couple of comments about the last caller. Points made about people not voting.
Mm-hmm.
I know my hometown in Springfield, the percentage of people voting is abysmal. In the last gubernatorial election, it was like 30%, and that's really terrible.
That's how you wind up with Mitt Romney.
That's true, yes. People that were going to vote, that would have voted for his opponent, Shannon O'Brien at the time, didn't turn out. They just didn't vote. And the people that supported Romney, they voted. And simple as that. And I guess it comes to a good segue on that on the current gubernatorial election. It is very highly likely that we are going to have our first African-American governor, Deval Patrick, who is, besides everything else, he really is an impressive person. If you ever heard him speak, he's very clear and very goal-directed. And when he first got the nomination, Democratic Party nomination, back in September, his early September, his margin of over the lieutenant governor who's running for governor, Kerry Healy, was like 40%. And then it had actually decreased down to 13%. And then, of course, she must have been taking her election campaign cues from Karl Rove because the attacks have been vicious. You know, attacks for his past when he was a defense lawyer, doing what lawyers are supposed to do, even if they're defending not nice people. But that strategy has worked exactly the opposite. So the latest poll, from what I heard today, that 13% is now 26 at 27%. And Mr. Patrick is up on her some like 53 to 26%.
Well, good.
So
you're going to have some work to do to undo the nastiness of Mitt Romney.
Well, he's kind of, as far as in this state, he's kind of a non-entity now. As you know, he spent most of the time going across the country bashing Massachusetts and trying to get the nomination.
Yeah, trying to prove his conservative street cred,
right.
I guess.
And I don't think that'll work, but he's as good as gone anyway. And the legislature is overwhelmingly Democratic to begin with, because that's not necessarily... All the Democrats aren't in line.
No.
And which brings me to the gay marriage thing. There is, by the way, tomorrow, New Jersey Supreme Court is going to make a ruling on the legality of same-sex marriage. And
I hope it comes down the right way.
And that could happen. Now, Massachusetts.
Now, let's be honest, David. I hope it comes down the right way because, you know, it's a human rights issue to me. On the other hand, this thing could, if it comes down in favor of gay marriage, to be brutally honest, it'll be the worst thing in the world for the election hopes of the Democrats, because it will mobilize the weirdos. They will come out in their millions to vote for that senator, Tom Kaine, that's running for as the Republican there against Menendez. Sometimes I look up, David, and I think, dude, this does, you know, these things don't just happen with this kind of timing. You know, there is a very profound machine out there that has real ability to somehow make stuff happen at the worst possible moment, because you know that Falwell and Dobson and Robertson and all these other creepy SOBs are chomping at the bit for a chance to get the mouth breathers out again to go to the polls to make sure that nobody can pick out China patterns.
Most good many of the Christian right is going to sit home and certainly are not enthusiastic, particularly with all the scandals from Abramoff to Foley, all within the Republican Party. So they would, you know, really are not very energized right now, and I can certainly see your point. Now, in Massachusetts, you know, that, as I mentioned a number of times before, the Constitutional Convention, State Constitutional Convention, which consists of the both the State House and the State Senate, will meet on November 9th, which conveniently is 2 days after the election.
Mm-hmm.
And they will vote on whether to... approve of that, of the anti-gay marriage constitutional amendment. Now, it would have to also pass next year as well, and then after that, if it passes, it would have to pass a binding referendum with all the voters. Now, all that has to pass this time and also next year is 25%, meaning 50 of the 200 legislators. And right now it's like an iffy proposition, but the prospects for next year of it being defeated would be much greater, because a number of the legislators who are supporting this constitutional amendment are not going to be in office next year, particularly the most virulent opponent of gay marriage is Bill Travis from Taunton, Mass., who is a Democrat, and he's retiring, and he's being replaced by somebody that's progressive.
Good.
So that will enhance the chance in 2007. And also, there's a chance that, and a fair chance, that the issue may not even be brought up because there are other constitutional amendment agenda items. And if it, and the Speaker of the House, who runs the convention, is a supporter, Sal DeMasi, who is the supporter of same-sex marriage, unlike his predecessor, Tom Finneran. And he may just not even bring it up. And if it doesn't get brought up, guess what? It's dead. And then the bad guy's going to have to go through the same procedure again about trying to get signatures on a ballot question. And
well, that's the thing. You're going to have to stand there and guard that human right for all you're worth, David.
All right. It's always going to be a battle. And, you know, the bad guys, you know, they're focused, as you know, and doesn't matter if they get defeated, they'll still come back, you know.
Oh yeah, because I mean, they don't. Frankly, I've become a very, very cynical person, David. I'm of the opinion that these people don't necessarily want to resolve the issue. These people want the issue alive because that's the only way that they've even got the remotest chance of maintaining any level of power. If abortion were ever to be criminalized, there's no reason for the evangelicals to come out. Where Massachusetts is concerned, if the right was taken away again, there'd be no reason to mobilize what right-wing mouth-breathing base the evangelicals have there either.
Well, right now the a considerable majority of people in Massachusetts would support gay marriage because it's been in existence for 2.5 years. Probably close to 9,000 couples have been married and nothing has happened.
Yeah, I mean, what's happened to the hetero marriage rate? Has it dropped like a paralyzed falcon?
And even the Republican candidate, Carrie Healey, is not for this amendment. She's tried to distance herself from Romney. She's actually pro-choice and pro-stem cell research as well.
Well,
she has to run on his record, and she's been around when he's around.
Yeah, well, it's the millstone around her neck, isn't it?
It certainly is, yes.
Well, David, I certainly appreciate you getting back with us. Let's see, last time we talked, you were in a softball league?
Yes, still involved with that. I'm commissioner of my softball league. We have meetings. Got one coming up in February in Phoenix, Arizona.
Well, you know, that's the thing. One season ends and you start thinking about the next one. That's a nationwide organization, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Called NAGA, North American Gay Amateur Athletic Alliance, and it's like 37 leagues in virtually every major metropolitan area.
Is there a website?
America. Pardon?
Is there a website?
Yes, there is. Just go to NAGA, NAGAAA. And it'll come up. Just Google it.
Okay.
And
okay.
Actually, my own league is Southern New England Friendship League. So it's SNEFL --
yeah.
And softball.org. And we have our own web. Little.
Yeah, that's. I love to see organizations spring up like that. I think it's so important to a national sense of community because we are, you know, this is a far flung nation, and anything that we can do that brings us closer together, that makes us more understanding of one another, that makes us able to communicate from one geographic region to, my God, there's nothing more important than that.
I agree. You know, I made myself, I've made a number of friends, a lot of friends from my counterparts and all over the country.
Oh, yeah. Well, I wish you the very best of it, I wish you well as the winter meetings come on.
I'll let you know what happens on November 9th.
Good deal. I appreciate it. I'll look forward to hearing from you.
My betting right now is that it won't even be voted on. It'll just die.
I hope it does.
That may happen.
Just send the vampire bats back to the cave.
And then they'll have to go through the expense again of finding another fraudulent means of getting people to sign petitions. The last time it was people thought they were signing a petition to allow wine in being sold in grocery stores, which is actually a major issue in this state now.
Wait a minute. You can't buy a bottle of vino in the grocery store in Massachusetts?
Right. Right now you can't.
Well, you know, it's nice to know there are some last vestiges of the things that we used to really appreciate Massachusetts for.
Yeah, I know. We did away with the blue laws on Sunday. Because people are going just over the border to Connecticut and New Hampshire.
Yeah, so it's not like you can't buy the bottle of wine on Sunday.
No,
you can't buy the bottle of wine.
And then the previous time, people thought they were signing a petition to ban horse meat and hamburger.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
These people have no shame, do they?
No, and you know what they do? They get people. They'd hire people, they'd grab people out of homeless shelters,
Yeah. Pay
them by the signature. The people that are actually getting the petition, for the most part, have no interest in what the question is. They're just trying to get signatures. So
yeah, you want to sign this?
Like a dollar or a name.
Sitting there gauging their signatures and balancing against the cost of the screw top wine that they can't buy in the grocery store. Oh my God, David. Thank you so much have a wonderful evening.
All right. Thank you. Always good talking to you.
Always a pleasure here.
Okay,
bye now. Listen, let's take a quick break, see what's happening in labor news from the fine folks at laborradio.org, the Workers' Independent News Service. When we come back, more of your phone calls at 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head-on. This is the one-year-old head-on radio network, and I'm Bob.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Hundreds of Houston janitors are on strike in an effort to win $8.50 an hour and health insurance. 500 struck the first day, with more going on strike each day this week. Talks between the Service Employees International Union and five big cleaning companies broke down, with the companies maintaining that asking for $8.50 an hour, a minimum of 30 hours per week, and health insurance is, quote, extreme, end quote. SEIU has a $1 million strike fund for the janitors, and a food bank is also being set up to support them. 5,300 Houston janitors represented by SEIU are seeking their first contract. New Mexico's first congressional district race is one of the top contests in the nation in this November's elections. The race features two women, the incumbent, Republican Heather Wilson, and the state's attorney general, Democrat Patricia Madrid. As Leslie Clark reports, to date, that contest is a statistical dead heat and is being closely watched by organized labor.
Political science professor and analyst Lana Atkinson says labor hasn't supported Wilson, and this year she believes organized labor has the capability that could get Democrat Patricia Madrid elected.
Labor being organized can really make a difference for a candidate is in their ability to participate in the ground war actively.
Regardless of who wins the first congressional district race in New Mexico, United Staff UNM President Terry Mulcahy says labor's job won't be over. It must hold a representative's feet to the fire.
If Madrid is elected, I think there's a feeling that all that work will go to something, that something positive may result from it.
For Workers Independent News, I'm Leslie Clark in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
United Mine Workers of America members shed their blood in 1898, defending their union rights in a Verdon, Illinois gun battle with armed, strike-breaking company guards. John Alexander, the Verdon Sesquicentennial Group, says the miners' battle is being honored now with a bronze memorial.
There was a time when workers had it even rougher than today. Today, coal miners have it much better, and one of the reasons they do is that their great-great-grandfathers stood up and fought at places like Verdon, Illinois.
The memorial commemorating the UMWA's Battle of Verdon will be dedicated this Saturday. Jesse Russell has today's economic report.
Businessmen who spend multiple hours a day on their cell phones could be looking at a reproductive work hazard. A new study from the American Society for Reproductive Medicine suggests that men who spend more than 4 hours a day on their cell phones have a lower sperm count. The study speculates that the damage could be due to electromagnetic radiation or the heat that the phones generate.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Four minutes and change in front of the hour. Love that song. That's one of those that I'm not burned out because they don't play it so much on the classic rock station. Yeah. So much of it has to do with what gets programmed into the iPod of my brain. And now, ladies and gentlemen, Miss Marilyn Monroe. Miss Monroe. Miss Monroe, put down the bottle, Miss Monroe.
I'm so sorry. This is for the horn. Happy birthday to the horn. Happy birthday to the horn. Happy birthday, dear horn. Happy birthday to you.
Well, I know I, for one, would like to take another commercial break, but we won't. Let's go straight to the phones. Our good friend David calls from the great state of Maine. Hey, David, thanks for calling in.
Good evening, Bob. Been a minute since I talked to you.
Well, you know, I've been thinking of you, though, because I wanted to congratulate you for getting ahead of the curve on the Congressman Weller story.
Yeah, but you know how it's funny how a lot of people started backtracking on that one.
Well, they started backtracking, but he made the reference to the committee.
That's true, but I mean, is it going to come out? And you know, this is another thing where people, this is another casualty of where DNC staffers talk on the Hill, and they say, I heard, and then they don't have any evidence to bring him down. But you know, all I have to keep saying to people who want this guy to go down, it's going to happen sooner or later, so just let it happen accordingly when it's supposed to happen, I guess.
Well, you know, there's so much weird stuff going on south of the border right now. You've got, I saw a story where the Oliver North had paid a political visit to Nicaragua to campaign for the opponent of Daniel Ortega. You've got the business with the Bushes buying the 100,000-acre ranch in Paraguay. We're getting pretty close to some boys from Brazil stuff. You know what I mean?
I got one for you. What about Kenny Rogers?
You mean with
let me tell you something. The guy had one of the worst pitching records, and then all of a sudden, It's a miracle. He's pitching like a saint. I mean, and you know what's sad? Nobody confronted that. No, the major league was silent. You know, Yahoo had to come out and say, "What was that on his finger?"
Yeah, well, I mean, you can see it there, and there are other pictures of it. It's a little spot of brown down on the hand, or brownish tannish substance. And I concur with the theory that it is something called tincture of benzoin. It's an adhesive, and it's been used in a variety of applications. And you know, and the thing is, he was told to go and wash his hand, and he went and washed his hands, but it don't all wash off.
I still think that guy, the reason why his pitching records was good, because he realized he needed an advantage.
Well, every pitcher these days in the modern major leagues, and some people might differ with me, David, but every pitcher needs an advantage. I mean, you've got there are guys who are number one in the rotation on baseball teams in the majors right now, whose ERA is approaching 5 and 6. Sometimes it's an embarrassment. It's not because there's no talent. It's because the hitters, they get up there and Barry Bonds comes to mind. The guy comes on the guy comes to the plate with more armor than Sir Lancelot, for God's sakes. There's no.
Did you see his explanation though?
I saw one of them.
I mean, that guy's not convincing to me. And I know why the baseball league doesn't want to get into it. It's because of the steroids thing and the blowout like that. If this was found out, it would never have the end of it. It would be in the cycle in the news, and people would be thinking everything in baseball was crooked once again.
Well, there's an element of that, and there's also an element. If you start into this, one, there's no way to prove it unless you sit there and go frame by frame through every blessed game that was played all season long and looked for a little bit of schmutz on somebody's hand.
Right.
The other, I forget who the pitcher was. A guy who pitched for the Rockies came out and said, "Look, I use the stuff. I use it. I pitch in Denver, for the love of God. The air up there is thinner than tissue paper. I gotta have an edge."
Well, you know, Bobby's pitching Thursday. So.
Well, yeah. And we'll
see how good he is pitching record is this game.
Well, yeah, we will. And the fact, I don't know, stranger things have happened.
Yeah.
People can, maybe he grew up a little bit. Did he develop a new pitch? I don't know. And I don't mean the spitter or the goo ball or whatever people are calling it. But, basically what it would do is allow him to get a harder grip on the baseball and get more downward pressure on it so that it would do more stuff.
You know, Bob, there's something scary about people who stare around the TV and watch for three to five hours and watch someone hit a stick with a ball and they can't even represent their democracy properly.
Yeah, these guys won't go vote. Do you ever watch any golf on TV, or is that just painfully boring to you?
I've watched golf a little bit.
I remember a few years ago, David, and I thought this was just ridiculous. People were calling in to rat out a golf. Jesus, he moved his golf ball a 16th of an inch, and they called in on TV over. It had something to do with a towel, didn't it?
Right.
You feel like Captain Kirk at the convention, get a life.
You know another thing, the power perception. People say that there hasn't been an influx of voters. How do we know? I don't see videos of people at the polling places all the time. I see a lot of people with a lot of graphs, a lot of fancy graphs, and saying, "Oh, this is how much we think people are going to vote this year according to cell phone polls and all of this stuff." But what I'm trying to tell people is basically, I'm trying to get the point across, is that when you say things like that and you perceive them as fact, to me, That's manipulation in my eyes. I don't know how much the people are voting, but as the population goes up, I think a lot more people are voting than a lot of people realize. I don't know percentage wise, and I don't know how many people can figure that out, but
Well, you know, you use census data and things like that to estimate the number of people who are 18 and older in the United States. So that gives you your base of people eligible to vote, you know, 18 to dead.
Right.
And there, you know, there's a statistical margin of error for that estimation. And then, and you go from there. Then there are the people who register who don't vote and the people who don't even register to vote. You know, one of the basic Democratic tactics every election cycle, David, is to get people registered, just to get them registered. And, you know, in 2004 in Ohio, we saw that what an uphill battle that was. All those provisional ballots that were thrown out, all the people who weren't allowed to vote, the people who were, whose ballots were challenged because, you know, the precinct 43 and precinct 17 were in the same room and they voted on the wrong machine, so their ballot got tossed out. You know, the fact that there were no lines in white precincts and, you know, 2.5 hour waits in African American precincts. You know, it goes on and on. I remember when Ken Blackwell came out and said he was going to disallow thousands of voter registrations in Ohio because they weren't printed on the right kind of paper.
You know what I can't stand about? I can't stand when people say these people who write these electronic voting fraud articles and say your vote doesn't matter, so you shouldn't vote.
No, like, no, wrong answer.
I know, but you see, you're starting to see that more and more. And I'm like, I understand what kind of angle they want to do because they want to make it up to be this ultra conspiracy across the board. And I understand there's a significant amount. But even if your vote is stolen, it takes 3 minutes, it takes 15 minutes, 10 to 15 minutes to vote, maybe a half hour at the most. How hard can that be?
Well, it's not difficult.
I know, and that's my point. And I'm so the argument is if you shouldn't vote because they're going to steal it anyway. Well, it's going to take a half hour.
I don't advocate that. I mean,
yeah.
You know, but I mean, I am enough of a realist to acknowledge the fact that I don't, as long as these machines are in charge, I don't know if it's going to get counted. I don't know if it's going to get counted right. And I don't know if that's going to be a function of the machine screwed up or there's some nefarious bastard out there who's stealing my vote. There's too many with these damn machines, David. There are just simply too many ways for it to go wrong. Even if there's no bad actor involved, there's too many ways for it to screw up.
That's true. More people should have their cell phone cameras on.
Yeah. You know, take it. Well,
and take as many things as you can and put them on YouTube immediately. Since you have YouTube at your disposal, you might as well.
Yeah, and put up, you know, I voted and the picture on the screen or whatever, or however, you know, marking it that way. I don't know if that would help. You know, there are some people out there. I heard our buddy Joe Vecchio, who's filling in for Dr. Bill this week. He said earlier, you know, if you get a chance, disable the voting machine. You know, and I take issue with Joe over that. You know, it's probably a felony.
Yeah,
it's probably enough to get you to Guantanamo. But the other thing is. Our side right now has a profound advantage, David, and that advantage is the fact that we certainly stand accused of registering, they're registering illegal aliens to vote, and how dare they? You know, we're accused of all that garbage, but the one thing we're not accused of is monkeying with the machines themselves. That's, you know, that baby is strictly in the Republican bathwater, and I want it to stay that way.
You know, when someone says, "What does it matter? Why should I vote? Because if it's not going to be counted," you know, the answer to that should be because it's a matter of principle. That's really why you should vote.
Yeah, I don't mean to get all fife and drum corps on us or anything, but
right.
You should vote because people died so you could.
That's true too.
You come from Maine, one of the great heroes of the Civil War, Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain. You know, Mainer of great repute, went on to be governor of the state, professor at Bowdoin College. You know, all the history of the Civil War. That's a good reason. The Civil War. There's a good reason to vote. The Revolution. There's a damn fine reason to vote. You know, and you know the African American community understands that lots of good reasons to vote. Martin.
Right.
You know, Emmett Till, everyone who had the courage to sit down at a lunch counter. Everyone who had the courage to stand up and say, I will not be treated like a subhuman anymore. Rosa Parks, there's a good reason to vote. And you know, the thing is, that's not just a good reason to vote for the African-American community. It's a good reason to vote for anybody who understands what it means.
And you know, you say, well, what if my vote doesn't count? And a good answer to that is, well, that's life.
Well, but it's not just life. If they don't count your vote, if they steal your vote, what will you do about it? I mean, you know.
Right, right. What will you do about it? And I think, you know, I have issue. I'm probably one of the only ones who has issues with the impeachment because I know what the news cycle is going to be.
Oh, I do too.
As soon as we issue the words impeachment, I think what we should do is we should have public trials. Public community trials across the board, from state to state, like what they're doing right now, indicting this administration state by state. That's what I think we should do.
Well, it's certainly a barometer indicating that the people want it, because that's gonna drive the media response to it. It was clear, you know, the media had a heyday because, you know, they like talking about dirty things. The media has the morals of, you know, something that lives in a cesspool. And so during the Clinton impeachment, there, did you hear about the stain on the blue dress? Oh my God, he has there's a hooker baby named Clinton somewhere in a trailer park in Arkansas. Oh my Jesus. And so, you know, that's because they love the sensationalism of it. But if they hear the American people clamoring for George Bush to be physically removed from office, they will have to cover it.
One more thing before I go. Did you hear of this interview segment that Bush did on CNBC with this reporter named Maria Bartiromo
of
Google?
No, I haven't seen that.
He says, occasionally, one of the things I've used on the Google, he calls it the Google.
Oh, yeah, where he called it, yeah.
You know, somebody should do a techno song to this one, the Google.
Do the Google. See, I said I wouldn't sing. But, boy, it's out there for the picking, isn't it?
Yeah, it's out there for the picking. Oh, and one more question. I said last.
No, that's okay.
Yeah. Do you think Israel is going to attack Iran in October, or is that next year?
You know, it.
Is it looking like that?
They're certainly, you know, poking each other with the sharp sticks, aren't they? I mean,
I saw a documentary on BBC that I downloaded called "Will Israel Attack Iran?" And in it, they showed they talked to some of the pilots of Israel and some of the former leaders. And what one said was pretty telling. He said that things don't change, and this was in August 2006. They won't wait till the summer of 2007. I was like, wow.
Well, if they get some sort of even marginally decent evidence that Iran is anywhere near building a bomb, they'll go and do it on their own. You know, they did it with Iraq. I think they already understand, David, that they cannot do it with Iran because Iraq's nuclear program was entirely centralized around the site. What was it, Asirak? The Iranians learned from that, and their nuclear program is scattered all over that very, very large country.
Did you happen to read that that anti-war article I sent you, the summary of nuclear war on? I thought that was a really good summary.
Well, it was. And, you know, the pity of these things is that I'd like for people to, you know, go up and pull it out of a newspaper box somewhere so that I'm guilty, and I suspect a lot of us are, David, of thinking that because we are profoundly plugged in to the steady stream of information that the rest of us are, too.
Well, you know what's scary is op-ed people posing as factual journalists, like Bill O'Reilly when he was talking about, I don't know if you have that soundbite, where he's talking about Afghanistan. He's like, that's all hearsay. They have not taken over the country. The Taliban, no, that's not. And he just kept going and going. He's going and saying, and one of the person who was an Afghanistan expert, she was like, but I talked to military, she's yelling, but I talked to military analysts. He goes, yeah, well, I talked to military analysts on Fox, too. It's like a madhouse.
Well, but you know, as long as he says it, that demographic of his. Bill wouldn't lie to us. You know, the crowd that he tells when they email to him to always make sure that they're pithy. You know, he thinks that's cute because it's almost dirty.
Oh, and before I go, the military on Daily Coast, they have a military rating for what the Democrats how they graded them on the military votes.
Mm-hmm.
And they're at the top of the list, Bob. And this is the funny thing. Guess who got the highest rating?
Hillary.
Close. Maria Cantwell.
Wow.
The lowest ratings for the Republicans. I couldn't believe this. Chuck Hagel got a D.
Wow.
Trent Lott got a D.
No, not Trent.
I know, not Trent. Elizabeth Dole, she got a D. Bill Frist. You know what's funny about the whole thing? I posted this on a board. The highest the Republicans could get was a C, and this is after 9/11. You know what? Someone should make a T-shirt of the whole graph, of the whole report card of all the Democrats and the Republicans, just so people can see a visual of it.
Oh yeah, you know you ought to ship that off to Bart Cop too.
Oh, I mean, if you look on Daily Coast, you can see it, but I'll send you the exact link to it.
Okay, great. Do please. I'd like to see that. I understand people like Maria Cantwell. I mean, she's state of Washington, right?
Right. Well,
yeah, huge military installations there.
You know, the problem is when someone says we support the troops, you have to stand up and provide statistics and facts now because they're in. The votes are in. People need to stand up more when they go on these shows. Bring the stats and say that's not true what you're saying.
Well, you're asking a lot of some people because the Joe Lieberman can get all mad about something that goes down in his debate, but you know he can't really get mad about people out there. You know he couldn't even be bothered to get mad at Dick Cheney during their debate when all that sleaze was flowing around. It looked like a hail fellow well met at a church social. The Dino Democrats, you know, we need them for a majority right now, but by God, we start working them over in the smoke-filled rooms as soon as the majority takes place. Like, you know, the conversation that I had last night with Heather Vokish, just because we win a Democratic majority, if mind you, David, we win a Democratic majority, just because we win one does not mean that everything is all of a sudden sunny and bright, because it's not. We are Democrats, and it is going to take Herculean, heroic efforts to bring Democrats together.
I agree with you.
David, thank you so much, and have yourself a wonderful evening, okay?
No problem, Bob. I'll talk to you later.
All right, later. Thanks.
Later.
Bye. I mean, you get that, right? Of course you do. It's going to, assuming a Democratic majority in both houses, it is going to, the first 100 hours, the first 100 days of that Congress are going to be like pushing frogs in a wheelbarrow. It's going to be a job. It's going to be a task. You know, and please understand that the Republican slime machine is already in overdrive. I mean, my God, suddenly there's a lot of attention being paid to the Corker Ford race in Tennessee. If you want to see, and I'll, look, you know, go there. If you want to see something nasty, I mean, a complete Frankenstein monster of race baiting, gay baiting, and hetero baiting, all rolled into one. Take a wander over to Fancy Ford, FancyFord, FancyFord.com. Now, I don't know if it's changed since last night. I imagine it hasn't. But one of the, you know, you see the picture of Harold Ford up there, and it's all done up. Every different page you go to is in a different pastel color. And so they're playing on the fact that he's unmarried, and on the one hand they're trying to play him as gay. On the other hand, they're trying to play him as some sort of raving libertine sex fiend, who incidentally is going to get your white women. They're trying to play that, but you know, he went to a Super Bowl party where there were some Playboy bunnies there. He was sponsored by Playboy. He went to the Playboy Super Bowl party. And if you see, oh my God, I saw the video of the ad they've got, and they've got, you know, this tacky woman who said, and she holds up, you know, the little phone sign where she holds it. Harold, call me. It is disgusting. And, you know, this thing, and, you know, Bob Corker says, well, you know, I don't have any control over it. And, you know, I'm just running for Senate here. They can run any ad that they want to. I don't control them. Yeah, if he said pull it, they'd pull it. So, you know, that's where we are. The level of Republican filth that you are going to see between now and November 7th and even after November 7th is absolutely amazing. This website, fancyford.com, sponsored by the Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee. You know, Republican members of the Senate give money to put this kind of sleaze and filth out there. That website alone is living proof that there should not be any Republicans in the United States Senate. I understand politics is sleazy in America, but that is beyond sleaze. We've got news to do, and then when we come back, an interview that I think you will, a conversation that I think you will enjoy. We're going to be joined by Florida congressional candidate Clint Curtis. Stick around for that. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. The White House is dropping the phrase stay the course to describe U.S. policy in Iraq. Administration officials say that's because Democrats are using it to criticize President Bush's policy in their campaigns. Spokesman Tony Snow said the expression, quote, left the wrong impression about what was going on. In Baghdad, U.S. General George Casey said he's considering sending in more troops to help stop the bloodshed and that they could be brought from both inside and outside Iraq. The U.S. death toll for October now stands at 91. Iraqi officials have agreed to develop a timeline by the end of the year regarding the stabilization of their country. Casey said Iraqi security forces should be able to take over security in 12 to 18 months. In Baghdad, the U.S. military is still searching for a U.S. soldier who works as a translator and who was abducted yesterday. The military is conducting house-to-house searches. In Gaza today, a Spanish photographer was released unharmed by Palestinian gunmen who abducted him yesterday. It's not yet clear who kidnapped him. At the United Nations, a Security Council draft resolution against Iran will urge a ban on the sale of missile and nuclear technology to Tehran. The resolution is in response to Iran's refusal to stop enriching uranium. The draft was drawn up by the U.S., Britain, and France and could be presented to veto-wielding members Russia and China later this week. At the United Nations, Venezuela has conceded the vacant seat it was trying to win and has asked Bolivia to run in its place. The loss is due to the Bush-bashing speech Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez recently gave at the UN. Meanwhile, U.S.-backed Guatemala appears to be in the lead to win the seat. In Russia, 40 of the 60 non-governmental organizations that were barred from working last week have resumed operations. That follows an international outcry after Moscow announced they were suspended because they did not follow correct re-registration procedures.
With 2 weeks left until the midterm elections, a new Washington Post ABC News poll finds that independent voters plan to support Democrats over Republicans by about a 2-to-1 margin. In that poll, 23% of respondents said the country is heading in the right direction, while 75% said the country has gone off track. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news are next. It's 2.5 minutes past the hour.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Oregon State University researchers have developed a purple tomato. They say it's healthier because a darker pigment contains the same chemicals found in blueberries, which are believed to reduce the risk of diseases such as cancer. Federal Reserve policymakers will meet for their second day of talks tomorrow. They'll announce whether interest rates will be changed, but many economists say it will probably stay at 5.25%. Sony has recalled another 250,000 batteries used in notebook laptop computers. Sony executives have apologized for the recall and say they're working on improvements in production, design, and inspection. However, none of the company's top executives will resign over the problems. Google has unveiled a free service that allows other websites to build their own custom search engines. Google dominates the search market with a 45% U.S. share. DuPont reports third quarter revenues of $6.3 billion, mostly due to high sales and a drop in fixed costs. Whirlpool's third quarter profits were up 35%, or $134 million. Whirlpool acquired Maytag earlier this year. Light sweet crude settled at $59.49 today. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow reached a new record high, closing up 11 points at 12,128. NASDAQ down 11 at 2345. S&P 500 flat at 1377. You can hear more at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Kimberly.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All right, we're back for the final hour, just like B-Rez said. And we're joined on the phone by one of those people that I genuinely admire. I talk a lot on this program about when you want to make change, at some point in time you have got to be willing to stand up and be responsible for being the agent of that change. Clint Curtis, the candidate for the 24th District House seat in Florida, joins us now. He's one of those people. Clint, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, sir.
Okay, let's do away with the sirs real quick, okay?
Sorry,
we're just buddies here. You and I haven't talked, but I've been following your career for a long time because Brad Friedman started talking about what you went through years ago, and I've followed ever since. I'm very pleased to have you on the program. Obviously, you've been out campaigning tonight. How's it going for you down there now?
It's going well, very well. In fact, Zogby just ran a poll, said we are dead even in the race. And our internal polling, which basically has about 29,000 people collected so far, because we're doing internal polling with our Vote Now system to guarantee the vote is not flipped, and it has us ahead by 11 points.
Oh my goodness!
Somewhere we're in between there.
And that puts you somewhere probably ahead of the margin of error, doesn't it?
Yeah, well ahead of the margin of error, I believe.
And you know, you've got
part,
no. Go ahead.
Part is this is a 7% Republican area, so. That bodes well across the country if we can switch that many that quickly.
Yes, it does. You've faced an absolute sleazy onslaught from the Tom Feeney campaign. How are people responding to that down there?
Well, of course, you know, what they've done down here, apparently this has happened all over the country. They've been putting up some really strange websites and trying to bash their candidates, because since you can't run on your record and you can't run in successes, then you have to smear your candidate. You've got nothing left, right?
Yeah, pound on the table.
Right. So in mine, they are running a crazy Clint Curtis campaign to say that I am too crazy to be able to be debated or to take a public polygraph test, because I'm the programmer that turned Feeney in for his request for the vote flipping program.
Right. And passed a polygraph test.
So we're taking another public one, you know.
But
he can't seem to make it, apparently.
Yeah, but they're saying you're some sort of an evil genius who has like the Jedi power to manipulate your blood pressure on a polygraph machine.
Apparently so. But what they're saying is that since I'm so crazy, I must believe what I say, and therefore I can pass it.
Oh, they've been watching Seinfeld, Clint.
Well, I'm thinking, what does that have to do with whether Tom Feeney could pass the test?
Well, precisely. And, you know, you come to this with a strong computer science background, and you understand the voting software. You understand the absolute paramount importance of integrity in our electoral system. I've got to think that after what happened in 2000 in Florida, that's got to be resonating with 24th District voters.
It seems to be, because they're finally starting to understand that even though, you know, the mechanics of voting is not an exciting subject, without it, you can't get out of Iraq, you can't save Social Security, you can't get health care, you can't do anything unless you take the vote back away from the elitists, which can just pick and choose who they want to run.
Well, exactly. I was commenting on some blog the other day, and I said, when you vote by computers, ultimately it's the computer who does the voting. And I know that may sound like an overly simplistic statement, but I like to think there's a little bit of profundity to it. I you know, on election day, Clint, I want to vote.
Right.
I don't want some machine to do it for me. I'm not that pathetic yet.
In 27 states, something has been passed, some good, some not so good, bills requiring the paper trail. In Florida, of course, we've done just the opposite. We not only have offered no way to validate on the electronic machines, the touchscreen wise, but on the ones where you go in and you demand a paper ballot for absentee. In Florida, we have passed a law, our legislature did last year, that you can no longer audit the results that come out of the scanner once you send the paper through.
Wait a minute. So if you want to have a recount, you just press the button again and it gives you the same result again? Well, we've had a recount.
There you go. That's what we've done in Florida.
Holy mackerel.
In fact, you can't even check the accuracy of your machine by sending through sample paper.
Now you're the computer guy. I mean, I know how to, I know where the on button is. doesn't that militate against every sound principle of computer science?
The only reason to do that is to cheat. There is no other reason to not check the accuracy of your count.
Kind of like the only reason for George Bush to say that the 655,000 dead estimate in Iraq is not credible is because he doesn't want to face up to it.
Exactly.
Because the science is sound, the mathematics is sound, the demographics, everything is sound.
But the spin is tough.
Oh, it's a hell of a spin.
It's tough to spin that number to make it sound like something that's good.
Well, I mean, you know, that's the better part of the state of West Virginia. 655,000 people, Clint. How many people are in your district?
Well, there are 440,000 voters.
And for those of us who aren't that intimately familiar with the districting plan of Florida, which I'm sure, having been in Republican hands, looks like something nightmarish. What area of Florida is the 24th?
We start at Cocoa Beach, we go up to Daytona, we go over to Orlando, and then we have this little horn that sticks out and gets Apopka.
And who lives in Apopka that we want to make sure that we dilute their vote by putting them in there?
Well, it has a lot of Democrats and Republicans. The Republicans live away from the Democrats a little ways. So you go up and you cut the Republicans off and pull them into this district. So Feeney has a 7% advantage. he has 7% more Republicans than Democrats. But this year, according to our polling, we're getting 10% of those Republicans, which I find embarrassing because I used to be a Republican at one time, and I thought there were a lot more honest Republicans than that. We're getting 90% of the independents, and we're getting all the Democrats. I have yet to find one Democrat that says they're going to vote for Tom Feeney.
That must have been a disheartening little grow-up moment when you realized what you were looking at in the Republican Party, Clint.
Well, when I was in Illinois, where I grew up, it was the Democrats that were the bad guys. It was Mayor Daley and his machine, and there was a Democrat going to jail once a day. And all that's changed now. In fact, they just sent their last Republican governor to prison for the rest of his life for bribes and corruption and all that sort of thing. So
yeah,
things change, don't they?
Well, they certainly do. And the Republican Party has changed, and I'm waiting for those Reagan Republicans to realize that they've been sold down the river and to see what happens to the American political scene when they do. Now, as far we've talked about election integrity, and clearly that's an area of expertise for you, but you are by no means, Clint, a one-trick pony. You've got policy positions that are very clearly stated, well articulated, and one of the ones that I want to address with you because it speaks to me. I was born in 1963. I'm a child of the space age. Growing up, Clint, the coolest thing that I ever saw on TV was watching the moon landing. Okay, but you've taken a strong stand with regard to NASA and technology.
Well, we pretty much gutted NASA down here. NASA is a third of what it was pre-Clinton. I mean, just gutted. And China, on the other hand, has a brand new facility, new space. They are predicting within 5 years they will have heavy payload capacity, which means they can launch a space station or a satellite killer, whatever they want to launch. If they have the ability to control space, just like if the Russians would have had that ability to control space, we are completely disarmed. They can knock out our global positioning satellites. They can launch missiles from space. They can do anything they want to. And all we have is a 40-year-old taxi cab.
Well, that certainly is what the space shuttle is. So now, in the gutting of NASA, Clint, is that also a function of the outsourcing of what should have properly been NASA's work?
Oh, yes. We've outsourced everything we could because basically that's where your payoff comes. That's why even though all of the social services and all of the education and everything else has been cut to the bone, we're still running a $9 trillion debt because it's all corruption, it's all waste. It's all payback for their friends for giving them money in the first place.
You know,
and I'm not just saying this out of hand. I sat there and I worked with Feeney and I saw it happening, and I heard him basically requesting it.
Yeah, because the company you worked for, was it Yang?
Gang.
Is that what I... Yeah. And you were... they were actively involved in the space business. Is that correct?
Yes. NASA contracts, military contracts, top-level security.
And so Tom Feeney at the time was the Speaker of the Florida House. Is that right?
Correct. And our head lobbyist and our corporate attorney.
Nice work if you can get it.
Nice work if you can get it. He is the only Speaker of the Florida House that's ever also been a head lobbyist of a company at the same time.
There's no law in Florida against that.
There's no law in Florida if you're in the right group right now.
Oh, okay. Because I was thinking...
Yeah. In fact, you may have noticed that there doesn't seem to be any law in the federal government either.
That's true. So...
That's where it is.
Yeah,
we have to get it back.
That's a phrase I use a lot on this show lately, Clint. You know, that's where we are in Bushmerica. So obviously it sounds to me like you're somebody who wants to go to Washington, who wants to sit in the House of Representatives and be serious about doing the people's business. Have you made any pledges about the way you would treat donor money, corporate money, any of that kind of thing?
I haven't made any pledges. I haven't requested any corporate or donor money. We have done everything on individual contributions.
And is it a safe bet it's going to stay that way?
Probably.
Okay.
I'm not really the specialist.
Well, no, I understand. I understand. I'm not trying to put you on the spot at all.
What we need to go to is we need to go to publicly financed elections. Because right now the incumbent has such an advantage over the challenger just in the money aspect, just in getting the word out to people, that it's incredible. And the trick is if the Democrats take back the House and take back the Senate, which it may be tough for them to flip the election so they can't, because there is just such an overwhelming swell of support for the Democrats this year. But do they become the same thing the Republicans did, or do they stand up and do the right thing?
Well, I think that's the million-dollar question right now. So are you saying that you would get behind a bill for the clean elections movement?
Absolutely.
Do you think
financing, clean up the elections, make sure everything is fair across the board. Then the people actually have a voice. Then you're going to see a completely different way of governing.
Well, you know,
the incumbent can then lose his job.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, what I'm hearing from you, Clint, is I'm hearing you say that getting elected does not confer a God-given right to stay there for the rest of your natural-born days.
Absolutely. You should have to compete each and every time, constantly, and you should be held accountable for what you do. And the way we have the system set up, that is absolutely not what happened. Same way with gerrymandering. When we gerrymander the district so that the legislature picks the voters instead of the voters picking the legislature, you have a serious issue, because then it becomes very hard to get these incumbents, whether they're good, bad, whether they're George Washington or Mark Foley, out of office.
Well, in a way, what you're talking about there is that I remember that old quote from Stalin: "It doesn't matter who votes; it matters who counts the votes."
Correct.
That's kind of where we are, isn't it?
It's where we are, but we can break that. What I'm doing in my race here, because I'm running against the guy who actually requested the vote fraud program, which, you know, is kind of an interesting thing. Not that that means he could use it, because, you know, he's just one of the boys who knows who pushes the buttons and who decides who lives and who dies. But in my case, I should decide that maybe he has some influence and I better at least take precaution for it. So what we have going is a thing called VoteNow2006.net, and people can go on, register their voting for me, and actually give me contact information. And I will know precinct by precinct what numbers I should have. If he flips a zone where I know the numbers, in other words, the election says I got 20 votes, and I had 50 people sign up and said they voted for me, I'll be able to contact those people and tie the people to the vote. And we'll actually see the fraud happening.
And that's legal, isn't it?
That's legal.
That's
outside the realm. People are doing it voluntarily. We'll kick their tail. They're not going to get away with it.
Well, I'm glad you're taking such a proactive approach to all of this. Let me ask you you know, all of this ties into the voting issues, Clint. But where are you? Well, we had a conversation earlier this evening that we perceive a fear, even with the Democrats taking back the House and hopefully the Senate as well, that you know, sometime after the new Congress convenes, that a lot of us are going to holler, okay, now impeach him.
Mm-hmm.
And we're afraid that we're going to hear, you know, things like the mainstream media saying, well, you know, the American people don't need a constitutional crisis like that.
Well, the American people need truth. And what they'll need to do, whether they get to an impeachment or not, because usually an impeachment takes years.
Sure.
Nixon was 3.5 years. Clinton, I think they were impeaching him his whole presidency, weren't they?
Well, if you get right down to it, I think they were impeaching him when he was born.
Right. So, you know, impeachment takes a long time. Will you get an impeachment of Bush before he actually leaves office? The odds are very slim. That's 2 years to gather your information, and you got to remember, he's up there saying, oh, that's executive privilege. Oh, I can't give you the top security. So, you know, it takes months to get anything out of these people. But the investigation alone to find out not just him, but everyone else who has broke the law, that's what actually brings down administration. If you look at Nixon, Nixon was never impeached.
No, he wasn't. That was the brave act of Howard Baker going to him and saying, yeah, look, you're on the way out. And
half of his administration went to jail.
Yeah.
And the rest of it was opened up, and it cleaned him up for a while. Now, of course, the same party, unfortunately, has come back.
Same people. You know what I mean? It's Kissinger, it's Cheney, it's Rumsfeld. These are all Nixon acolytes.
Yes. But the same people have come back stronger than before. And with a little different methodology, instead of just breaking the law, now they ignore the law and then change the law to the way they broke it.
Right, and say that they're clarifying it.
Right.
I have come to despise the word clarification. because every time I hear it come from the Bush administration, I know that somebody's going to get screwed.
Right. Adjustment's always a good one.
So it sounds like it's safe to assume that you are very, very much in favor of putting some nice, clean sunlight on the operations of the federal government. How do you respond, Clint, to what I'm sure is the typical Republican argument that, if Clint Curtis wins, so does Osama?
Well, I would have to wonder where Osama is. He didn't get him. You know, we basically haven't even looked for him. He's probably sitting in Saudi Arabia in some palace somewhere. But the fact is that everything we have done has taken, not only given the terrorists more reason to fight us, but it's taken away our freedoms at home. So I think they're helping Osama a lot if that's what he wanted. That's kind of what he got.
It's what he said he wanted, isn't it?
It's what he said he wanted. He wanted to take away America's freedom. Well, now we don't do that anymore. We have passed a law so that we can pick people up off the street and not even give them a trial or charge them with anything. You can't take away any more freedom than that.
Well, no, you can't. Of course, the New York Times came out, Clint, and said, no, Americans have nothing to fear from the Military Commissions Act. I read it.
Mm-hmm.
We have plenty to fear. Is that a reexamination of that god-awful law? Something that you would want to see out of the next Congress?
We would kill that law immediately. That would be my main goal, is to throw anything that's taken away our rights. Get rid of anything that says America allows torture of prisoners. Get rid of anything that says America is going to be able to tap your phone, is going to be able to look at your internet files, is going to be able to look at your library files. Anything like that, off limits. That is the basis of America, and we've taken that away. And there's no reason to do that. If we don't trust our own people, we've already lost.
Well,
we're not America anymore.
No, not at all. That's what causes me to occasionally refer to us as this once great nation. I want the great nation.
Benjamin Franklin said, if we trade even the smallest amount of security or the smallest amount of liberty for the smallest amount of security, then we lose both and deserve neither.
Pretty smart guy,
that's
that, Franklin.
That's what this country's founded on.
Yeah, exactly. How can, this program goes all over the country and, in fact, all over the world. How can people outside the 24th District help you, Clint?
They can go to my website, www.clintcurtis.com, and they can either contribute or they could volunteer, because with the Vote Now system, where we're actually validating people's votes, we're making all these calls to tell them it's out there and to pick up that information, and we can set you up so you can do it from anywhere in the country, free of charge, doesn't cost you anything. Set you up on an internet connection that allows you to call out to District 24, and it's just like a local call.
Great, great. How do you handle these last couple of weeks of the campaign? I mean, we know it's getting sleazier and sleazier by the minute. Do you respond to this stuff, or do you take a proactive approach? Do you ignore it? What?
Well, my response is probably different than most people can do. A lot of people are going to get slandered and smeared and all that sort of thing. But my race is a little different because I testified against Feeney in front of Congress in relation to the fact that the company we both were working for also had a spy working there. And that spy was eventually caught and admitted to sending Hellfire missile chips to China 20 times. So by smearing me, he's violated an aspect in Sarbanes-Oxley that says you are not allowed to retaliate against a whistleblower that has provided information on a espionage case, and that's a criminal offense, and we are actually filing that with the U.S. Attorney's Office.
Oh, so that's already in the works.
That's already in the works. It's in the mail.
Well, great. Great. We haven't talked before, but I've been watching your campaign. I have great hopes for it, Clint. Because if we can begin to clean things up in Florida, then that speaks volumes to what we can do and what we can accomplish in the rest of the nation. I don't mean to speak ill of your state, okay? But I've still got a chip on my shoulder about 2000, and it's not likely to go away anytime soon. And there are places that I, red places, so-called red places in America, that I want to see come back to political, fiscal, philosophical, and moral sanity. And with your success there, that will tell us that that process has begun and can, in fact, happen all over the country.
Exactly. And once we take him down, he's part of the leadership. He should win this race. once we take him down, it will be a shot across their bow. They will know they have to back up. And that's what we have to do. Plus, we will give a vehicle so they cannot flip the elections. And if you can't flip the elections, then you have to be responsive to the people. You can't have this arrogant, I don't really care, I'm the decider attitude.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you're gone. And I think they've had it too long. I think most of them are gone anyway if we get the vote back.
I think you're right. Clint Curtis, thank you so kindly, and I wish you the very best. And I want you back here if you've got a few minutes in the couple of weeks after the election, and we'll talk about what the 110th Congress is going to do and what kind of legislation Clint Curtis is going to author. Okay?
Sounds good.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a great evening.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Clint Curtis, candidate for Congress, Florida's 24th Congressional District. You got a little time? He can hook you up so that you can actually be a meaningful part of the campaign, and you can do some very, very important work making sure that the Repigs cannot steal the 24th district election. You got a couple of bucks? He could use those too. How about it? We'll come back after a break. Your phone calls are welcome all the way, you know, as usual. This is Conversation Radio. Your phone calls are welcome. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. I'm Bob Kincaid.
The Head On Radio Network is brought to you every night by the Carpenters and Millwrights. The Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters is a portion of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America, or more commonly called the Carpenters Union. The millwrights are a very specialized craft that perform their work with highly sensitive equipment and perform much of their work on machinery like turbines, laser alignment, and other highly specialized tools. We would like to thank the Carpenters and Millwrights for their support, because freedom of speech is free, and it's brought to you by the Carpenters and Millwrights, working hard every day to provide a brighter future. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
A routine visit to the pediatrician costs more than a minimum wage worker earns in one full day. For nearly a decade, Virginia's minimum wage has remained pitifully low at $5.15 an hour.
I'm a single mom and I have to work two jobs just to pay the rent and put food on the table. It's really hard.
America needs a raise. Help raise the minimum wage. Sign the petition at www.vafairwage.org. Sponsored by the Virginia AFL-CIO, working hard for all working people.
Hi, my name is Joanne, and I have mannequinism. Well, I did have it, but I'm not a mannequin anymore. Doctors said over 75% of my body turned into plastic. They said it's because I wasn't active in my community, because I didn't vote or volunteer or I don't know. All I wanted to do was cry, but I couldn't because I had plastic eyes.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
about 22, 23 minutes left in tonight's program. And I'm going straight back to the phones in a second, but I got a couple of things out here I need you to know, if you didn't know them already. The bushes are out there killing with cars again. Well, if we'd known that the Bush family was going to use automobiles as missiles, we certainly would have done something about it. Yeah, really. I mean, you're of course well familiar with the story of how Laura Bush T-boned her estranged boyfriend's automobile back in the early 60s. How they just had a big breakup. She shot through a stop sign and, you know, slaughtered the boy. And you're well aware that the police came along and they saw no reason to test her name was Laura Welch at the time, to test Miss Welch for alcohol consumption. No need to do that. Headline, a couple of days old. Did you see this? Officer struck by Bush's cousin dies. A police officer died Saturday, 4 days after being run over by a sport utility vehicle driven by John M. Walker, Jr., senior judge on the U.S. Second Circuit Court of Appeals in New York. He maintains court chambers in New Haven, Connecticut. He was leaving work when the accident happened. This member of the Bush family slaughtered Dan Picali. Dan Picali had been a 17-year veteran of the police force in New Haven. He was directing traffic in the rain Tuesday night. He was wearing one of those, you know, reflective vests that even the blind can see. You know, the one that just lights up the minute that light gets anywhere near it. When the Right Honorable John M. Walker Jr. No more Officer Picali. He voluntarily stepped down as chief judge of the court earlier this month. He's 65 years old, John M. Walker Jr. is. He was, of course, a crony and appointee of bailout Bush, George H.W. Bush, W.'s daddy. And this is a USA Today story. Police officer died Saturday. Work with me here. I'm looking for something. A police officer died Saturday, 4 days after being struck by a sport utility vehicle driven by a federal judge, the mayor said. Officer Dan Picali, a 17-year veteran of the force, was hit while directing traffic in the rain Tuesday night. He had been wearing a black raincoat and a reflective vest. The SUV was driven by Johnny Walker Jr., senior judge on the U.S. Second Court of Appeal in New York, maintains court chambers in New Haven, leaving work when the accident happened, police said. There it is. No charges have been filed. Police Chief Francisco Ortiz said the accident remains under investigation, but officers did not feel it was, wait a minute, here it comes, are you ready for it? What, no, this is where we play that little game of what would have happened if it had been you, or if it had been me. Police Chief Francisco Ortiz said the accident remained under investigation, but officers did not feel it was necessary to test Walker for drugs or alcohol. 65-year-old Bush family member of the 2nd U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. You know, when you get to be chief judge of the 2nd U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, you know, I'll have another martini for lunch. I'll just bring the bottle. Officers said there was no, they didn't feel it was, oh my God. Now, is this a language issue? Is this a journalism issue? Or is this a cop issue? Usually, a cop gets killed, somebody dies. You know, redneck runs over a cop or something like that. They will hunt him down and, you know,
They'll shoot him, but pity will stay their hand. And by that, I mean it's a pity they ran. It's a pity that they'll feel like it was a pity that they ran out of bullets. What the hell does this mean? What the hell kind of journalism is this? But officers did not feel it was necessary to test Walker for drugs or alcohol. What kind of lawless place is Connecticut? I'm sorry, you have, unless I miss my guess, in West Virginia, if you are engaged in an accident that causes serious bodily injury or death, it ain't the cops' call. You are gonna have a blood test. Well, but Bob, you see, he's one of our betters. He's a member of the Bush family. Directing traffic in the rain. I mean, do it in your own head. He's in the rain. Did he have his lights on? Was he negligent? Was he grossly negligent? Was he willfully, wantonly reckless in mowing down this police officer, this 17-year veteran of the New Haven Police Force? Mayor John DeStefano said in a statement this past Saturday, Officer Picali was more than a cop. He was someone who brought people together, who created a sense of community. He was a life enhancer to all with whom he came in contact. More than any memorial, his basic decency will keep his memory vibrant in our city. But his basic decency was not entitled to a blood test on a Bush family member. Now, is that too much to ask? You know, part and parcel of this inquiry is, are we a nation of laws, or are we a nation of men? Well, it's a Bush family member. Let's not test the PP, the breath, or the blood. Well, if that's the case, then this is not a nation of laws. This is a nation of men, where some men are better than others, and some men are more equal than others. Or so it would appear to be in the state of Connecticut. Did you not see this story? I almost didn't see this story. The damn thing's not... 7 very short paragraphs long, that buried in God knows what part of USA Today on Saturday. His memory will be vibrant in our city. But not vibrant enough. His life was not valuable enough to at least test a Bush, this Walker character, to at least test him to see if he was loaded out of his mind when he ran down a traffic cop. It takes a lot of guts to stand out there in the middle of traffic and no, with the whistle, and no, you stop. Okay, come on. Hey, stop. What are you doing? Takes a lot of guts. 17 years, Officer Picali had done that. And one night, as has been the sad and sorry case with some 655,000 Iraqis and some 2,800 American servicemen and women, one evening they had a run-in with a Bush and they got dead. I will admit the possibility that John M. Walker, Jr. was as sober as a Sunday school teacher. I will admit that possibility. I'll even go so far as to say it is a likelihood. But you know what? When you've just killed a cop, I don't think it's unreasonable to make sure. Jesus, consider the... What about you? What about where you are? I can tell you how it is in West Virginia. Every so often, you know, you're out on a Saturday night, you're taking the family home from movies, and you got to stop, and you got to whip out the insurance papers, and you got to whip out the registration, and you got to look at the cop and show him and show him the driver's license. And well, you've been drinking tonight, sir. No, I got my coming home with the family from the movies. I got popcorn on my breath, for the love of God. We got Soviet road checks to see if people are driving sober. And this guy can come howling out of the parking garage in the New Haven Federal Building and just kill a cop? Am I overreacting? Would it be nice to live in a nation of laws again? Where just because you're a Bush, you get to kill people and get away with it? Jesus. Let's go to the phones. Bob joins us from North Dakota. Hey, Bob.
I'll get one.
Hey, Bob.
Hey.
Sup?
What's doing?
Having an aneurysm. Having an aneurysm.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm right here having a fit.
Are you gone?
No, I'm here.
Hello? Hello, Bob.
Hey, Bob.
Hey.
There you are.
Oh, I'm playing with a puppy here.
Oh, okay.
Now, I got a new member of the family here.
Oh, yeah? What kind of pup?
Oh, he's a German Shepherd purebred.
Oh, my goodness. That'll be a beauty.
Oh, he is. He's my best friend.
Youngster, is he?
Yeah. He's 14 weeks.
Oh, my.
Yeah. And he's a friend. I'm working on him. I'm working on him like I'm working on you, like a puppy. Okay?
Yeah.
You want to be a king? No. There are no kings in this world. There are only people. Only people, Bob.
Yep.
And like that that guy I just followed. What was his name again?
Clint Curtis?
Yeah. Did you see his testimony?
Oh, yeah, I'm well familiar with his story, Bob.
Did you see his testimony? I mean, you're talking about a man that spoke truth to power, and power just dumped him, okay?
Yeah.
And now he's doing what? He's running for Congress. He is asking those people that dissed him. You know, it's kind of like, you know, you're going into the hood, you're facing someone that's of a dark skin, that's got a blue rag or a red rag around his head, saying, hey, what you doing in my neighborhood, white man? You see what I'm saying?
I do.
You're stepping into something you don't even understand. Clint Curtis has been there and done that. He stepped into something acting as a loyal employee. And he came up with a way to steal elections.
Yeah, he was simply following orders, as the saying goes.
Absolutely. And he played the game like I did back in 67, Bob. And then in 1968, we handed them the door. But after that, the country just said, no more. That's enough. We've lost enough of our sons. Well, I'm going to ask you people, all you people, even you, Bob, when is enough enough? When is enough enough?
That's the eternal question in the Bush administration, Bob.
No, I'm asking you, Bob.
No, I'm answering you. That is the eternal question for the last 6 years. When is enough enough?
The Bush administration is not America, Bob. If you had listened to what my friend Sarge said, the Bush administration, hey, the Nixon administration was not America. Okay. The Carter administration was not America, was it? Nor was any other administration that's ever been in charge of this country. So when did you give up your rights, Bob?
I never did.
When did you give up your rights? I'm not asking every other American. I'm asking you.
And I'm answering you, Bob. I never did.
Okay. Then the American people have to say this. We will never give up our rights. I don't give a damn how many laws you pass. Like, I was listening to my good friend Bruce Birch today, and And that's why I'm calling, because I heard a man, a very good man, a giving and loving man, almost weep on his show today, Bob. You know?
Yeah.
But this guy, this Curtis guy, he could be a good, decent American. But he did something terrible in the past. He wrote a program that has stolen every election since he wrote it. And so, where is his, you know, that part of you, right down deep inside of you, that tells you that this is something that I did.
No, but see, Bob, you got to, well, I mean, if you've seen the testimony, you know, he did not believe he was writing vote-flipping software. He thought he was writing a program to be tested to prevent Democrats from doing it.
Right. Okay.
You know, he was in the belly of the beast,
Bob,
at the time.
Bob, stop that thinking, okay?
No, please, Bob, I'm telling you what the truth is.
No, you're telling me what you think the truth is, but who started this thing? Please, who started? Who is the guy that did it? He is. He wants to undo what he did. Okay, let's go back to the Lord of the Rings, okay? We're gonna take that magic ring and we're gonna throw it in the furnace. And the guy that's up there to chop the finger off the guy, hey, it doesn't matter, Bob. He started it. And if he cannot come out to the
So, Bob, let me understand here. Are you saying that we're better, that Florida's 24th District is better off with a crook like Tom Feeney in office?
No. Trent Curtis realizes what he did. I know he did. And I'm saying this to all the people that are listening tonight that, okay, I'm an old man on my way out, but doggone it, I understand politics, okay? I played it a lot more years than Jim and all the other boys, and I'm not supposed to say a name, I know that, but listen to me. It is a game, and you can play it like dice, or you can play it like poker, or you can play it like anything you want to play it like, but it's a game, okay? And the cards fall, or the chips fall, as they may. But now, no one in this country has ever seen any kind of hell come down on them. Not one person in this nation, the United States of America, has ever seen desolation or you know, you're talking about what happened in Katrina. Well, hey, take that 10,000 times fold if you start a nuclear war. You can just kiss your posterior and
my posterity too, Bob. I understand all of this.
Yeah, but stop thinking in the now. Okay? Please stop thinking in the now. We want it to be a democratic landslide in November, but listen to Clint. He wrote the program that will rip this election out of your liberal arms. Like my liberal heart, it will rip me apart. And then after that, I will be what I should be. You know? Not BC French, but I will be resistance, Bob. Resistance.
Okay, Bob. Bob, I've got it. I got another phone call I got to take.
Okay.
I appreciate it. Later.
What?
Will do. And pat the puppy on the head for us. All right.
Oh yeah, he licks my face every day like I'm the kid.
He thinks you're the best thing that ever happened on planet Earth, and you know what? He's right. We'll talk to you later, Bob. And John.
Hey, man.
You there?
Oh yeah, I'm here, man. And I just, you know, I'm about to pull Animal Farm back out and watch it tonight.
Not a bad idea.
I mean, if any of us had even had a fender bender, I think in any of the 50 states in America, the first thing they do is have that little straw in your lips.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, a needle in your arm and a cup catching your pee.
It's unbelievable. I mean, I
it's Tuesday evening. It's raining in New Haven. And, you know.
Some people are more equal than others, or some animals are more equal than others. I mean, these people are animals.
Yeah.
They're not even human. They're subhuman. My cats have more decency than these people.
Ain't that the truth? Isn't that the damn truth?
I really think I've got a fairly recent animated version of Animal Farm, and I think I'm just going to have to pull some bites out of it for us, because, I mean, this just it's just such a great example of how these people live by a different set of rules. When they don't like the rules that are in place, they're going to rewrite them, or they're going to use their influence to get around them.
Yeah, I mean, who called? I got the story here in front of me. Who called Police Chief Francisco Ortiz and said, wait, John. I mean, these things just come to me. Do you remember when nobody got hurt in an incident involving what a Kennedy, who is a congressman from Rhode Island? You remember that? Well, maybe not. I mean, you're in Australia.
Well, no. I got this.
But we had a 10-day news orgy over that. You know, well, he went into treatment, you know, but the cops didn't see fit to test him to see if he was loaded. He didn't kill anybody. He scraped up his car.
I mean, isn't it kind of usually that there's a huge inquiry any time that a police officer is killed in the line of duty?
Well, exactly. And this is a line of so much hooey, this business about, well, you know, the investigation is ongoing. Screw the investigation. The evidence is gone. The evidence was whether or not he was loaded. Well, you know, we can't be putting a federal circuit judge in jail, especially not a Republican, not this time of year.
Well, did you hear about the makeup artist thing that happened with the politicians in the UK a few weeks ago?
Huh.
Someone posing as a makeup artist went and swabbed the foreheads of a whole bunch of politicians, and virtually all of them came up positive for marijuana, cocaine, and various other things. I think someone needs to go up on this guy and yank some of his hair out.
It would would it tell the booze?
If he's a chronic drunker, I think it will.
A week later,
there's enough on my head to you know get me in trouble for probably the last 5, 6, 7 years.
We won't go there. I'm being facetious. I know what you're talking about. But you know, this is a push. We know that alcoholism runs in their family. The Prescott Bush was a drunk.
Well, I mean, to do this kind of stuff to people on a regular basis, wouldn't you have to be under the influence of something just so you can sleep?
Just about. Just
I mean,
about.
I really think it's kind of hard to say what I really, really think. But, you know, to use the words of our mate, Mike Malloy, you know, I just really hate these people. They are evil. They are absolutely un-American, even though I don't even like using terms of being, you know, American or Australian and all that kind of thing, because I think that's kind of divisive in its own nature. But this is the kind of thing where, you know, where is the outrage? Where is the outrage? If anyone else had run over a cop, they would be strung up until such time they were tried, and they might have even been shot before they ever had a chance to be tried.
Yeah, that's the point. Anybody else, anybody but a Bush. You know, that's the kind of thing that makes it all too readily apparent that we have got to have a return to what this nation is all about, a nation of laws and not of men.
You know, when I warm the chair for Bruce starting next week, I think I'm going to grab some audio from the BBC because we've been listening ever since we moved. Gail and I have been kicking back and listening to BBC Four at night and listening to some of their political discourse on air, and it's so, shall we say, civil.
Yeah.
And there's real discourse, and there's no browbeating. There, you know, there's actual information being put out, and people's views are being respected, whether they're disagreed with or not. And then there's an actual dialogue between the opposing people.
Oh, not in America. No, that's not legal.
Well, we had it at one time, mate, you know. Before 1980, you know, I remember as a young kid, it wasn't just on the Jim Lehrer NewsHour that you could have a couple of people on for a debate where there actually was a debate.
Yeah.
And not garbage graphics underneath the left-wing candidate saying...
Well, you know, 9/11 is the worst thing that ever happened to the United States because that created the news crawl.
Really, really sad. It's just so sad what has happened to the level of discourse. You know, in our country, and Australia is falling down the same hole.
The world is falling down that hole, John. I mean, the fact of the matter is, America sneezes and the world gets the flu, and it's the damn truth.
It's the truth, mate. Well, you got some credits due. I'm going to let you go. I just wanted to ring on.
I appreciate it. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, man. And I think everybody needs to go and dig out and dust off their copy of Animal Farm. I really do. Maybe that should be Mike Malloy's next reading.
Hey, somebody needs to drop him a line.
Yeah, maybe I'll do that after I get off the phone with you. But, man, keep up the great work, and everybody will be hearing me back on the air next week. Can't wait.
All right, it'll be fun. Thanks, John.
All right, good night.
Later. The show tonight, of course, was produced by the lovely, talented, darling, and dear Agnes. This on our... first anniversary of The Horn. It was announced by Brian Reznor, engineered by him, John Fox, in Sydney, Australia. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the streams and the archives and the podcasting of everything on The Horn. Peter Godbold, we thank you for your IT expertise. We thank our news ninjas. We thank our moderators in the chat room. Most of all, we thank the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream, and by supporting this network, they're saving it. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you. You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life, you hear me? Give my creation life.
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let's go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. Six. Five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey, everybody. Glad to be with you this afternoon. Glad that you're along with us. We're going to be here from 3 to 6 today, kind of filling in for Bruce there in that last hour. He'll be back with us real soon, and Bob will be along with us at 6, from 6 to 10 tonight. So thanks so much for joining us here on the Head On Radio Network at the Guy James Show. Glad and proud to have you all as listeners. How you doing today? My, it's been another busy news day, and we'll get into a little bit of everything today, just quite a little bit of everything, and we hope you'll stick around for the whole 3 hours and have something to contribute to the program, and you may do that by giving us a call at 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. Glad to have all of you give us a call today. I noticed on Mark's show they were talking about the border, had a ferocious argument going over the border issues, and I don't know. I've kind of got an opinion about that. I really do, and I've never expressed it real strongly. And I know a lot of you will disagree with me. I know a lot of the conservatives, particularly, disagree with me. I see that border fence as sort of, and this is not going to be the subject of the show today, but I did want to comment on it. I see the border fence as kind of an experiment in social engineering. And I'm not so sure that we can do that. I'm not so sure that any nation on earth has ever been very successful at social engineering. I think when the time comes that a nation is going to be changed, a certain population it takes over a majority, I think that's just how it is. And I don't know that we're going to be able to change that. I'm just looking at it from a practical point of view. If this country becomes predominantly Spanish-American someday, Hispanic, Latino, whatever you want to, whatever terms you like to use, I don't know that that can be stopped. I really don't. To be perfectly honest with you, I don't know that it should be stopped. So we'll see. You want a liberal view? There is a liberal view, but it's my honest opinion. I know there's problems with that. There's problems with what we do on this border issue, no matter what we do. Anyway, that's not the subject of the program today. We're going to be, in the second hour, we're going to have an expert, one of the nation's foremost experts, a gentleman by the name of Bruce Cummings. He's a specialist on Korea. He's a professor at the University of Chicago, and he's written many books on Korea and Asia. He's actually a guy that Bush ought to have in his administration. He ought to have a guy like Bruce over in North Korea right now, trying to negotiate with these people. And I don't care who you are. I think you can negotiate. And so I would love to see experts like Bruce Cummings over there making our case. So we're going to do that, and that'll be in the second hour. We don't have any guests the first hour. We don't have any guests in the third hour today. We're going to wing it that third hour. It's going to kind of be an open mic, and you can, call in and do whatever you like. Well, not whatever. Well, no, wait a minute. We're not bound by FCC rules, so you can call in and do whatever you like. Even if some of you freepers are listening, you can call in and say what you like. I don't care. Did I mention that? It was down in Crawford, Texas last year. And got protested by a bunch of freepers. Whoa, man. You talk about a group of losers. My God, I couldn't believe it. I can't remember the gal's name, but we were riding around in this SUV to surveying the whole situation in Crawford, Texas. And there was a lady attorney that was from San Antonio that was chauffeuring me around Crawford. And we had the road blocked by this group of freepers that were trying to keep us away from this little place where we wanted to go. And my God, what a group. They were scary. At first I thought they had a Halloween mask on, but they didn't. And what a motley crew. Ah, yes. Actually, motley crew would make them look real well-dressed. And speaking of well-dressed, what is it with George Bush? Have you wonder? I just wonder. I've noticed this several times, and I don't know if you guys pick up on some of this little junk that I do, but have you noticed that just about every news conference that he does, question and answer period, that he'll pick somebody out and say, "My, you look nice today. You've got such a beauty." It's always a guy, too. Oh, what a beautiful suit you got on today, he told this one guy. Man, that's a good-looking suit. You really look good in that suit, Bush did. Wonder what the deal is with him. I don't know. Is there something about Georgie we don't know? I don't know. I'm just saying. I'm just asking. That's all. Somebody says he was embarrassing today on the chat room. And by the way, welcome to everybody on the Head On Radio Network chat room. Glad to have all of you folks along with us, too, along with our friends over at Democratic Underground and Democrats.com and SmirkingChimp.com and a whole bunch of the websites. Glad to have all of you folks along with us today. I did see, looking at the news right before the program started, that OPEC, and what a surprise, OPEC says they're going to raise prices next month. They're going to cut down production by 1 million barrels per day so that they can raise prices next month. To all of us that got criticized for being somewhat cynical toward the Bush administration, people looking at us and saying, you don't really think that they're manipulating gas prices just for an election, do you? For all of you that said that to some of us who think that, there you go. There you go, right there. OPEC could raise prices right now, couldn't they? Couldn't they cut the production back right now if they wished? I mean, if they're doing it to raise prices, why not do it right now? But they're going to wait till next month. Probably along about November the 5th or 6th, wouldn't you say? Mm-hmm. I think so. Hey, yesterday, I promised you that we were going to talk a little bit anyway about this media problem and how we're constantly getting accused of... Well, you know what they say, the liberal media. And my answer to that always is, liberal media, what liberal media? Who, really? You know, you stop and think about it. How? What liberal media are they talking about, okay? Of course, the righties will tell you that all the network news are liberal. That's a crock if I ever heard one. They're getting more and more conservative every day. The biggest newspaper in the United States circulation-wise, other than that rag USA Today, I believe is the Wall Street Journal. Is that a liberal newspaper?